From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Friday when the mayor of Rochester announced her intention to address racial inequity on an economic scale that goes back many decades in our community. Mayor Lovely Warren was talking about, among other things, what to do with revenue generated by the legalization of marijuana. And the mayor says this can and needs to be a form of reparations. The mayor says black and brown communities in right here in Rochester have been targeted by racist policies. And this is a chance to start making good on that. Now, this is an issue that was raised by the Raise Commission, the Commission on Racial and Structural Equity. Not talking about legalization of marijuana per se, but I'm talking about economic inequality, economic justice, and what to do about that. What are the policies that might be established to create equity and justice? How can we certify minority and women-owned businesses, connect them to lenders? How can we redesign local civil service functions to accommodate minority applicants and employees? What are the steps that are concrete and right in front of us? Two of the co-chairs of the Raise Commission joined us yesterday on this program, and we spoke primarily about policing. We want to make sure they came back to talk about some of the other issues that the Raise Commission's worked on, and we can certainly talk about just about anything that Raise as a commission has worked on. But we'll start with economic justice this hour, and I want to welcome them back to the program. Bill Johnson, co-chair of the Raise Commission, thanks for making time, Bill.
For the invite.
You got it. And Muhammad Shafiq, thank you, Dr. Shafiq. Thanks for being back with us.
Oh, thanks a lot for inviting us back.
Let me just start with what the mayor of Rochester raised last Friday. And Bill, when you saw the mayor saying, look, we've got legalization of marijuana coming, New York State just signed off on that. There's going to be revenues generated. We're talking about potentially hundreds of millions of dollars statewide. So, I mean, a slice of that anyway. Is there a function for some of that money to serve as targeting economic injustice?
Potentially, yes. I think that there is a lot that's not known about this. This kind of developed very quickly. So the devil is in the details, and I think it's incumbent on all of us to understand what those details are. So I say yes. It is a good conversation to have to figure out how to inject more money into communities to level the playing field.
Muhammad Shafiq, how do you see it?
I personally think, well, marijuana has been legalized, though I have some reservation about that. But I would not say that money raised from marijuana, that could be used. I think we need to relook into the city budget, how different allocations are made, and how we can do redistribution of that money to that we through that the people of color can benefit. I'm more for re-examining the whole system, especially, you know, if you look into the budgets of the few years and how, where money is spent, how that is spent, to really look into that. A budget that represents all segments of the community equally.
So the Raise Commission has put forward a number of ideas about this. And as we did yesterday, what I want to do with the co-chairs is work through how they see the problems of racial inequality in our community, especially when it comes to economic justice, and how we see possible solutions here. And before we get into some of the many specific proposals here, I want to address some of the other things that have come up in this community, some from two of the commissioners themselves, not the co-chairs, but you might have heard on Connections earlier this week, two of the commissioners from the Raise Commission who decided not to sign the final proposal on the grounds that it did not call directly for reparations. Now, reparations is a term that has been used for a long time. Often it was a term used to denote a plan to offer direct payment to black citizens, to African Americans, especially people who have been descended from people who were enslaved, on the grounds that there is a deep injustice that needs to be addressed. It has been broadened, perhaps most popularly, by Ta-Nehisi Coates' writing for The Atlantic several years back. The Case for Reparations was his piece. And the idea is it's not just about slavery. It's about economic dispossession. Daniel Ponder on this program made the case that she wanted the commission to use that term and to call not just for different policies, but different policies that targeted directly black citizens, people who have been dispossessed generationally. And this is some of what she had to say on this program about why she didn't end up signing the final report.
It's in the data. There has been study after study done that shows if you want to close the racial wealth gap, you have to explicitly give to black people, because black people were explicitly taken out of programs like the backing of federal loans through the Federal Housing Authority, the Homestead Act, the Mother's Pension Plan. We can go on and on. Sometimes the GI Bill, African Americans could not access. So in order to right the wrongs, we have to be comfortable with giving directly and explicitly to black folks, and race-neutral policies won't assist in closing the racial wealth gap.
All right, Bill Johnson, let me start by asking you to respond. Go ahead.
Well, I have no disagreement with what Danielle and DeMond said. This issue was never discussed. The issue of reparations was never discussed in the 6 months of our deliberations. Raised at the last minute, came in the form of a dissent, and out of respect for two commissioners who had worked very hard. And by the way, let me make it very clear, I do not believe neither Danielle nor DeMond repudiated the work that they spent months developing, she in criminal justice, he in housing. They raised this issue, we discussed it, and we decided to incorporate this in the report. I said to Ann, probably not right to call this a dissent, because a dissent means you do not accept the report. And I do not believe, as I said again without being redundant, that either of them is repudiating the work that they spent so much time developing. But moving on from that, I'm going to make two quick points. I think that this is a discussion that when I spoke to the mayor directly, after she made her proposal, and I said it is a discussion worth having. I think that it is a very substantive discussion, because everyone of dark skin should not get a payment from the government. I mean, let me be very clear, and I don't want to sound selfish about it, but I haven't done badly in my life, even with all of the obstacles that I face, nor have my children. I would not take a COVID check. I don't need it. Give it to where it is most needed. So I believe that a discussion about reparations needs to be targeted to the people who can benefit from those payments the most. Everyone should not get. I firmly believe this. And if I got one, I would send it back immediately. I would not take it. There are other people who need it. That's the one point I'll make quickly. The second point is this. We should not run the danger of getting into so many conversations about so many points. There are over 200 recommendations in this report, mm-hmm. and we've only lifted up about 50 of them as we call priorities. We didn't discard the other 150. We have them there. They sit there, and we say at the right time, those should be looked at too. But I say, Evan, and I think Dr. Shafiq reaffirms this, we need to have something come of this report. We need to be able to point back months down the road and say, these things have been accomplished. And if you've got 200 different conversations going on, it's going to be very difficult to really accomplish anything. Let's find what we can work on. Some people call it low-hanging fruit. I don't care what you call it. There are things in here, as Dr. Shafiq said yesterday, that don't require much of an effort. It only requires a commitment and a focus on getting them done. And that's where I'm at. So I don't want to have all these different conversations floating around the community. This little group over here talking about this redlining or greenlining. This group over here talking about reparation. This group over here talking about police reform. We really need to focus our effort on getting something positively accomplished from this report and soon. Like in the next 3 to 6 months.
Wow. Dr. Shafiq, do you want to add to that?
Yes, you know what the mayor said. Their reports are there, and we have taken from them up to last minute what recommendations came from them. That those are also included into the report. So their reports are there. It's not a real dissent. It's an issue of repression, and certainly that word is not used. But if you look closely to the report, there is more than that. What the word would say. You know, there is a why the word was not used that could be discussed further, but there is more in that. For example, it asks how to encourage African American women businesses, how there could be special funding for that. But what I like, what the report says, that look, you know, change the laws and make localized laws for businesses, which refers to the MWBE certification, local MBE certification, and also how people of African American descent, Latinos, and others, those who are in real, those who need to be supported, how really that can happen through local changes and local support. Meaning, you know, to be anti-poverty, you need to have ways and means to raise the status of people, and that can happen, you know, which we talked yesterday about that in civil laws. I mean, we talked about it, you know, changing the employment so methods and such, how that happens. And also other things which could be changed to give more opportunities to the African American community, to the Latino communities and others, to be able to easily get into businesses. Some of the housing discrimination, you know, this has been historical, which has come, how we can make change there and how that can happen, and more employment opportunities. You see, more employment opportunities, which we give, and that is, you know, sort of giving sort of preference in that those, some of the areas to recruit African-American. That will elevate the poverty situation. That will eventually bring relief to the community, which has been deprived for history, for many centuries. So, I mean, you need to have practical steps. Mm-hmm. And actually, this commission report, if you look into the housing, if you look into the business area section, if you look into the reforms in policing, the reforms in criminal justice, the reforms in mental health and addiction services, and other areas, especially in human and social services. That's a big elephant there. All those reforms together, if you look, that is supposed to elevate poverty, and that is supposed to raise this community, which has been deprived from centuries.
Well, and I want to stress the point that Dr. Shafiq and Bill Johnson are making here, which is that this is a commission that worked for months with the intention of releasing a report that wasn't just platitudes. It is about creating workable solutions that can be accomplished. And just as an example of how the RAISE Commission's work is already generating conversations, yesterday at 1 o'clock on this program, following the appearance of Dr. Shafiq and Mayor Johnson, we had candidates for Rochester City Council. Two of the candidates on the program referenced the RAISE Commission's report in saying that it should be shocking to the community that the community cannot quickly and easily access police training materials. How are police trained? Who's doing the training? What is the emphasis on? To hear that the RAISE Commission was stonewalled and they're supposed to be the ones who can get this information, you already have city council candidates saying that must change. So there are examples already in play here about change that could happen. When it comes to the economic side, again, diagnosing the problem, we're going to talk in a moment about how our guests see these specific ideas, and some of which Dr. Shafiq just touched on. But in diagnosing the problem, you know, Bill, you were the mayor of Rochester, and if you want jobs in the city, you need employers in the city. Next hour, we're talking about the YMCA's decision to close a city location. And I think this community, you know, just based on the email I got in the last 24 hours, it's split between people who say, well, that's just an economic decision, and if people don't want to go there, and you shouldn't have to have a building there. You shouldn't have to have an organization there. You shouldn't be open there, whether you're Wegmans, the YMCA, or whatever. How do you diagnose what happened with the YMCA, and do you see this as part of a question of injustice?
I've been spending my career, particularly after I came to the mayor's office, got a closer examination of what was going on to understand that conscious choices are being made. And when businesses close in the city and relocate to the suburbs, and they can easily do that because there's no such thing as a regional planning process. You can't. Every community is negotiates on its own. It can offer a better deal. So we've seen that. What happens with the Y? You know, there was a period of time when all of the Y's facilities were within the city limits. And now, hardly, there's probably one left, and that's over on Thurston Road, and that is a very, very minimalist a service. All right, everything else, huge, up-to-date, modernistic facilities being built all around the suburbs. Absolutely nobody's going to come downtown. Why should they come downtown? Have to compete and find parking, which is in limited supply, to go to a facility when they can drive out to a place closer to their home. That doesn't make it right. And we can make conscious decisions to, in fact, determine where our services are located. Somebody pointed out when the protesters went to Wegmans and said, you know, you've abandoned the city. Well, that's an old story. We fought that battle back in the 90s when we were trying to get supermarkets in the city, which is why you see more top supermarkets in the city than you see Wegmans supermarkets. But where we are now, and what this report says, is that you can't dismiss the total implications of a decision. You may base it on economic reasons. Oh, we don't have any members. But then what you have done is you have further isolated a group of people who live in this area who now have a harder time accessing services because they just relocated farther and farther away from them. So, this, as I say, nobody's exempt from this problem. When we say that this community has a racial problem, and some people don't want to accept that, then we say, let's have this conversation. And let me say, Evan, and we had a meeting yesterday, Dr. Shafiq, Arlene Santiago, and I, with our staff, and we're saying we're not waiting for people to say, come and tell us about the Rays report. We're contacting them, the business community. The Chamber of Commerce, we haven't heard from them yet. The Chamber of Commerce, we say we want to come and we want to talk about this report and we want to find out what your contributions can be. We've got 19 school districts. We want to go and say there are specific issues in here that talk about how you can change your curriculum so that your students in the suburbs are learning about cultural and historical issues like the city students are. We've got the colleges and that talk about training, what kind of curriculum. We talk about creating new kinds of jobs. So we're not going to sit and just wait for them to make up their mind that they want to talk to us. We're going to push that button and go out and talk to them and break everybody into this discussion. And that's the kind of dynamic. And I'm going to tell you, Evan, I'll say this. I've been on, in my career, at least 20 to 30 commissions, task forces,
sure,
advisory groups, okay? And I learned from that, and I'm so pleased that other people say, well, incorporate your experiences. And I said, we cannot just be content writing a report that everybody talks about. Let me use my favorite report, the anti-poverty report, mm-hmm, which was, I have a good friend and colleague of mine, dear friend, Ed Doherty. We worked together. Ed Doherty wrote a compelling report. All right? The first half of it dealt with the problem. The second half of it, he detailed solutions to how do we deconcentrate poverty in Monroe County. I used to go out and talk to people, and all they wanted to talk about was the first part. Oh, isn't it so bad? We got this much poverty. It's affecting our children. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, have you read the second part? We don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
You see, it was too painful for them to talk about because it meant they had to give up some of that privilege. I am determined you're going to talk about the second part of this report, okay? Whether you want to hear it or not, you're going to talk about it because I'm going to say to people, don't be wiping your brow saying, oh, woe is us. we got too much racism in our community, then we say, look at these pages. Not that they are the final word, but they do post and provide a map to how we get out of this mess that we're in.
Okay.
And that's what we're committed to doing.
Well, and let me just follow up briefly with you on this then. And we're going to spend the second half hour sorting through not just the quote-unquote low-hanging fruit, but really the specific solutions economically. But if you want people to take this report, to read it, to understand the problem, to acknowledge a community that's been built on dispossession, on racist structures, on a flight to the suburbs from businesses and organizations, if that is part of what you want, and you want to take this to schools, and you want to take this to the business community and different organizations, then if you get in the room with George Rommel, who's going to be on this program next hour, Bill, you know, and you feel like the wise decision is part of that history of, frankly, of racism, then number one, is there a government mechanism to start fixing that? Does it have to be voluntary? And number two, if it has to be voluntary, how do you convince, whether it's the YMCA or anybody else, that what you've done is hurting the city?
Yes.
And hurting black and brown communities?
George is a friend of mine. George was a colleague of mine. He was at the Y when I was at the Urban League. I've known George for over 25 years, and I know his heart. I understand his dilemma, okay? But he needs to say to his members who take comfort in not coming downtown that there is a legitimate reason why the YMCA needs to maintain a presence. Total service. There are people not going to get on a bus. Do you understand the idiotic notion of that? 6 o'clock in the morning when the buses aren't even running, when people want to go to the gym, they're not going to climb on a bus and spend 30, 35, 40 minutes getting to a facility and getting on another bus and coming back. They got to go to work. Right now, they can leave their house and be downtown within 5, 10, 15 minutes. He has to tell his corporate membership that part of what you're paying is to continue to subsidize the Y on East Main Street so that people who live in the city have as nice a facility to do their exercise, to maintain their health, as you do out here in Pittsburgh, in Penfield, and wherever else you are. I would say that to George. And I know it's a tough decision because some people say, well, why I need to do that? Why can't they afford their own Ys? They simply cannot, because we've already demonstrated that these people earn below, you know, the median income level. They need help. And these people are going to say, if you want to maintain your lifestyle, then you're going to have to figure out how to help other people maintain their lifestyles until they're able to do so on their own.
With equal facilities. With equal facilities, Bill.
Equal facilities.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Dr. Shafiq.
Yeah, let me add a little bit to that. You know, when you look to this whole situation, what is happening, it's all based on capitalistic mentality. And that mentality means to, in fact, if you look into the last few years, that greed of capitalistic mentality has drastically increased. As you see, millions are taken as bonuses by the CEOs of the companies and others. So meaning what is happening in our country, and certainly the capitalist mentality would not invest in areas where there is less capital coming to them. So that is what is happening. There is a responsibility, which I want to pinpoint that. The responsibility is fourfold responsibility to all of us. There is the government responsibility. There is the media responsibility. There is the social and civic leadership responsibility. There is the religious leadership responsibility. All of us together is to raise humanity and the status of humanity, to lift up poverty, you know, to elevate poverty. How that could happen, that is real capitalism. For example, we always in educational institutions say to spend on the education is not spending. To spend on education is actually making the future better for everything, for humanity, for environment, for businesses, for everything. Because when a human being is educated, you have not spent it, but it becomes more productive. Similarly, we need to convince the capitalist mind and that way. It is not just MCA or other thing, MYCA or other things. It is overall the capitalist mind. And I think government, media, social and civic leadership and religious leadership all need to pay attention to this.
Talking to the co-chairs of the Raise Commission, Dr. Muhammad Shafiq and Bill Johnson, with us for the hour. And after this only break of the hour, we're going to go down some of the list of their specific proposals that they believe, as Bill Johnson said, could not only be achieved, but could be achieved soon, 3 to 6 months from now, at various levels of government, as they look across this community and try to decide what can be achieved here. More with them on the other side of this only break. Coming up in our second hour, we talked to leaders of the YMCA of Greater Rochester, which announced plans this week to close a city location permanently. That sparked some critics who said that the Y has been focused heavily on the suburbs, Pittsford, Penfield, without investing in city locations. But the Y says this is a trend that's been long in the making. It's the right one for a number of reasons, and they will explain next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. When you read the Raise Commission report, as I would urge you to do, there are a number of different prongs here. The establishment, let me just take one for example. What are people paid for the work that they're doing? The Raise Commission has proposed that there be the establishment of a $15 an hour minimum wage for city and county employees. Bill Johnson, as someone who was the mayor of Rochester, I've got a number of questions there. Number one, what is the mission of that kind of a proposal? Is it to sort of lead by example? Is it to convince the business community to do the same? Number two, can that be paid for by the city? I mean, of course, sometimes the critics say, can you afford that? And number three, are there other mechanisms to go beyond a $15 minimum wage at the city or county level?
I think it's lead by example, and the city has already instituted it, and the county hasn't. So I think the implication is that the county should adopt a $15 an hour standard for its workforce. Now, I think that's relatively easy because with civil service, and you look at those rankings there, I believe that there would be very few county workers who wouldn't be making $15 an hour. But I can guarantee you that even at the city and the county, if they are below that, they would tend to be people of color. They would be in the lowest job rankings. So that is there. Now, once they have done that, it becomes easier for them, both of these government entities, to begin to encourage the private sector and the not-for-profit sector to adopt those same standards. So, yeah, it's a great lead by example.
What's the response you've heard from county government on this?
I believe they are there. And look, the county executive has embraced this report. He didn't say he found any areas which he would dissent from. And one member of the commission was Steve Brew, who is the majority leader of the Monroe County Legislature. We certainly would continue to rely upon Steve's knowledge and understanding of this process to lead his colleagues in the legislature to take whatever legislative actions are necessary from this report.
Dr. Shafiq, tell me about $15 an hour as a minimum wage as a goal across the community and why it matters.
You know, if you look into that, the hourly wages, that has, you know, as you see the inflation, the way things are happening, it has not actually gone up in that way. So it needs to go up. And also especially, you know, $15 is not something, especially for those workers who are hardly surviving, you know, that's still not much, but I think it should come up. The businesses should come up with that. Other things, you may know about Barakah Muslim Charity. Since its inception, we have 4 or 5 part-time workers. We give them 15 hours a day because that is the way you encourage the, when you give them more, they will work more for you. They will work harder. They will pay more attention. They will be more creative because you are securing their daily bread. When you give daily bread to anybody, how those people, so it's again, giving them better salary, better hourly wages, making them to be more, better working and paying better attention to it. So it's, I think this is something good for all businesses, whether they are working for the city, county, government, anywhere, or private businesses and things like that. So my question is that it's not the 15 hours daily is just one issue. It's not going to solve the whole problem. The whole problem is deeper down into sanctuaries. And that's what I'm emphasizing, that all areas needs to be looked into it together. This Race Commission report is exemplary report. Actually, it is examining the whole human body, where it is suffering, how it is suffering, and how really relief can come to this whole human body. So that is something that we need to look into, that the mayor and the county executive, Mayor Bill Johnson have said before, also has promised with the commission that they will implement it. Now the report is there in their hands. There are two types of strategy that we are using it now. We are using it public awareness. We will go all the way. Mayor Bill Johnson is committed to that. Arlene is committed. Others are committed. We will go all the way to the community to raise their consciousness, to say, in other words, sort of a pressure coming on the mayor and on the county executive to start implementing, find ways and means how this commission report can be implemented, and especially the priority areas, which is whether their means, which can be done by them without, you know, much here and there, which is easy to be implemented, in fact, those areas. So, meaning, and we have said to them also, all of the co-chairs, all three of us have said to them, that we are ready to sit with some other experts from the community and from the county and the city together to put our heads and minds together to analyze the report, take the priority one after another, give you a way and a methodology how those could be implemented. I think that is needed, and this city and this county should become an example for the rest of the country. This disease is throughout the country. If you look into this, this is an issue, not only localized issue. It is throughout the country. But I think today, since the county executive and the mayor have taken this initiative and the report is there, we can start implementing the report one by one, and the community can see how this is happening.
And Dr. Shafiq, I'm going to read an email from a listener, and I'd like you and Mayor Johnson to respond. Because as you mentioned earlier this hour, Dr. Shafiq, you see a potential problem with a capitalistic mentality. Certainly there are members who are commissioners on the Race Commission. The mayor mentioned Steve Brew, a Republican Monroe County leader, who I cannot believe Steve Brew would say he's not a capitalist. And, you know, so there's this push-pull, I think, at times between whether capitalism is sort of inherently going to move in these directions or if there is a quote-unquote conscious capitalism that can address some of the shortcomings of capitalism while keeping some of the benefits. And so here's what John writes to us and says, Evan, thanks for continuing this conversation. And in regards to the capitalistic mentality that your guests have spoken of, it seems a question of short-term versus long-term outcomes. In our capitalistic system, it seems the focus is purely on short-term outcomes. There is no overarching plan, and the only long-term positive outcome often Republicans use is the idea of trickle-down economics. The entire argument resides on that premise as opposed to a body that considers long-term effects. I wonder what your guests think about this form, capitalism, in which we are entrenched. Dr. Shafiq?
You know, capitalism is not a bad thing. In fact, it has been praised in the religious scriptures. So to be a capital, to have money, to be rich, it's a good thing. It's highly praised and worthy thing. But to be, in other words, to be having that mindset of a capitalist, meaning to capitalize the economy and not invest it in human welfare, that is something which is wrong. So investing it in human welfare, that's what I'm referring to it. So, and the capitalists should see that in some areas they will have less capital, and some areas they will have better capital to make out of it, how to keep the businesses going on, and what will happen. Even if they have less capital for a certain area, how that region will be developed, or that part of the area will be developed. So they should look into human welfare first, and then creating capital. I think what is happening today, and I think Mayor Bill Johnson will agree with me, we look to money more, creating capital at the cost of human welfare, and that's wrong.
Bill Johnson?
Well, I want to approach this question. I'm not trying to avoid your question, but I do think that one thing we should have done early is to really convey in explicit terms how this process is unfolding. Right as we speak, all right, when the mayor and the county executive got this report, they immediately put it in the hands of their staff, not all of the people, just not the people who were involved in the process, but their senior management. Look at this report, go through it and assess, and let's create a process. Now, that board process can be dangerous because it means you can get bogged down in time. But I think there is a sense of urgency. So there will be, we have been assured that by April 30th, this community will clearly know where the raise phase two is going, which is what we call the implementation phase. There will be explicit and measurable steps. Somebody has to be appointed to oversee the implementation of this report. And let me be very, very clear. I will say this, and I might get some people who will be upset by this, who are waiting for the opportunity to get involved. We can't afford to put people in there who are in any way opposed to this report. We're trying to get progress. So I don't know. It's the mayor and the county executive's call. Who will comprise any kind of implementation panel? It could be totally internal. I don't know. But I think it's got to be committed to achieve action. There will be a matrix of sorts. They've used the term dashboard, where all of these recommendations will be posted, and there will be the opportunity to update them, I suggest, at least every 90 days, no more than 6 months, that the community will know exactly what will be happening. And the other critical point is there are people who need to be brought into this conversation, people with resources. I give you a classic example. There's one of the earliest recommendations in the business development group is recognizing that minority and women-owned businesses have suffered from two huge problems. First, they need to be certified in order to get government funding, okay? And even now some private businesses are saying, are you MWBE certified? The certification process is cumbersome, to say the most kind word I can say. It takes you an inordinate amount of time to fill out the paperwork. The people who are running their businesses, they don't have any human resource director. They don't have the time to fill out. So most of them forego it. We found that there are other communities that have simplified and expedited this process. Use those. That's one. The second is capital. Most of them are running their businesses on a shoestring. Let us create a source of capital that they can go to for short-term loans in order to be able to effectively compete for business. Well, you need to bring people who control capital into this conversation. The bankers, the financial advisors, the investment people, you need to bring them to the table and say, here's a goal. I want to create a fund, put a number on it, $5 million, $10 million, and we're going to put that money there, and we're going to have a process that's equitable so that people can apply. Those are the kinds of actions, not people sitting around debating. Should it be this? Should it be that? At this stage, I don't have any patience for that kind. That's useless energy as far as I'm concerned. Take something that's been thought through clearly. You can find out how they arrived at this. Say it's a good thing to do. Now let's get it done. And I think if the community understands right as we speak, there are people on the staff. They meet with the co-chairs every week, So we had one of those meetings yesterday where they update us, where we say, oh, maybe you should do this a little differently. We aren't giving up our involvement in this process. So I'm just saying a lot of things are happening, and some of the questions that will naturally arise should be answered when people see the process that's going to be put in place to make a lot of these things happen.
All right. So let's take a look now at some of the other direct proposals here. Bill and Dr. Shafiq, maybe Bill, just take this one and we'll ask both of you. What's on your list that you think could get passed or accomplished by governments, whether it's county level, city level, et cetera? What can get done in, to use Bill's time frame, 3 to 6 months here? Bill?
Well, if there is going to be a new recruit class for the Rochester Police Department and there's constant churning over there, mm-hmm. I think the first thing will have to be a wholesale review of the training curriculum. Look, we're not the only ones. The UCLM, the Police Accountability Board, just to name two of groups that have put out reports that have spoken clearly to something, a new paradigm for training Rochester police officers. I think that that's something that can take place immediately. And if the city is putting money into this training facility, there should be no stonewalling about them being able to get the curriculum. I think that that would be one of those most immediate things. The whole mental health thing that's been churning around, and now we've ended up, we've got FIT, we've got SIT, we've got two separate systems. There needs to be talk about how do you reintegrate those systems, all right? And how do you create the protocols for getting those people where they need to be when they need to be? Because you don't have a lot of time. You can't make an appointment for a crisis intervention person. Say, we might need to call on you tonight at midnight. They need to be where they are. We provide all kinds of emergency service. The fire department staffs up. Every firehouse is staffed up 24 hours a day. Our ambulance service that we contract with is staffed up, and they are deployed at certain points so they can be at a scene of a fire or an emergency. I think the response time for the fire department is within 3 minutes. For the ambulance, it's within 8 minutes. We need to create that kind of thing. When there is a call for a crisis intervention team, how soon will they be able to get to that site? Things like that, in my opinion, are the kind of discussions that can happen immediately. And when the next, God forbid, the next explosive situation happens, people will not be asking, where are the crisis intervention teams? Because they will have worked on the protocols, and they will be in place, and they will show responsiveness. Now, we don't know yet what kind of intervention they can have, because I'm not one who's going to send an unarmed civilian into a highly charged situation where danger or the loss of life could occur. We're not going to be debating now rather than a civilian citizen who needs the services is dead. We have to be debating that a civilian worker is dead or seriously endangered. We cannot afford that. So these are the kinds of discussions that are targeted to producing results that I think have to happen. And you can look throughout the report and you can find them repeatedly. The whole cultural competency thing, which Dr. Shafiq spoke to eloquently yesterday. There's specific training that needs to happen. Set those up. Schedule people to get them. These are the things that I'm hoping will come out of this review that's going on now, where they will say we should be able to achieve this within this specific time frame in the year 2021.
All right. Dr. Shafiq, what is it within reach here?
So let me go through a few more what the Mayor Bill Johnson mentioned that. I would simplify the MWBE certification, which is should be localized and simplified to encourage brown and Latino, to encourage minority people to own businesses, and especially the women aside, to encourage them to do businesses. Also, some sort of not only the certification, but a community group, which especially from the business community, which can look after them to see how successful business could be run. So that is needed also. That will generate quite a bit of, it will help quite a bit how to promote businesses among the minorities. The other day I spoke about cultural competency program for all Monroe and city employees all over, and also for the police department. And for the police department, I want another mental health and addiction services certification. So both certifications are essential for police department. And the first certification, cultural and racial and cultural competency, or cultural competency as a whole certification for all in Monroe County and city employees. Third is, which I mentioned, the fourth one is healthcare center. Will you have healthcare center throughout the city, throughout Monroe County, in fact, you know, especially I'm referring to the rural areas also. Healthcare center where localized people, trained and skilled, could be employed there, and they know about their community, where they can see where are the distressed people and how that could be helped. Now, that what I mentioned last time, that the hospitals, the two hospitals or three hospitals, major hospitals are doing that, the urgent care, and there is another name also. How that can happen in different parts of the city, different parts of the other area, rural areas, where there could be local people to see if there is addiction issue, if there is a mental health issue, they can detect that from the very early stage and how to help those people. So these four things, and I think if we have a real sincere group of people and leadership combined, sit together, it will not need extra taxes to be increased, other things. I think the way our budget is, the way our social services are, it could be organized in a way that could promote all of these things.
All right.
Evan.
Yeah, briefly, Bill, go ahead.
I want to just, and I'll give citations so that people can follow it. There are several items in here that can be quickly moved on. Page 66. Page 64, under Category 5, number 8, create a racial justice task force that looks at all aspects of inequities within the criminal justice system. That is very explicit. The chief, the administrative judge of the 7th Judicial District, the district attorney, the public defender, heads of local bar association, that's just a matter of either the mayor or the county executive individually or jointly convening that group and say, could you start your examination as lined out here? All right, that's one. Over here on page, you talked about this yesterday, Evan, the PrEP program on page 58, 1F. Promote, expand the career pathways to public safety program offered by the Rochester City School District and the police recruit education program known as PrEP, offered by Monroe Community College, to firmly establish a direct pipeline. Apparently, there's a disconnect between those programs. Bring the RCSD and MCC personnel to the table, point this out to them, and say, you should be able to start working on this. No additional money. It's not saying creating a new program. It's saying better align existing programs so you can end up getting highly trained recruits for the Rochester Police Department. So there are a number of these scattered throughout this this report. And I think it's just a matter of somebody directing the traffic, and the mayor and the county executive have the ability to convene people and point them out and say, I'm inviting you here today, tell you about RAISE, and I want to say, here's a part of the RAISE Commission report that you can begin to immediately respond to. That's the kind of action. With all the other things we talked about, MWBEs, mental health, there's just a host of these things that are in the report. They aren't scattered. You don't have to go look for them. They're all in one particular location, and then just begin to monitor action that comes from it.
I want to give a few references of some books.
Dr. Shafiq, you're going to have to do it in about 20 or 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, since we are coming to a close. I want people to read to understand racism, really. The Color of Law, A Forgotten History, How Our Government Segregated America.
Richard Rothstein, The Color of Law, yes.
Yeah, Jim Crow and New Jim Crow. Wow, our students are reading since I'm teaching the course. Running for Freedom by Stephen Lawson. And I would like also them, this book, I love it, Malcolm and Martin by Cohn. These are some important books to understand what is racism and why, what has happened to us in America and how this segregation has gone deeper into our history. Thanks.
Dr. Shafiq, always a pleasure to have you, and I look forward to the next one. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it.
Bill Johnson, thanks for making it work twice this week as we try to get into as much of the report as we can. Let's continue with that work. Thank you, Bill. All right, Bill Johnson, Muhammad Shafiq, co-chairs of the Race Commission. More connections coming up in a moment.